Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
I'm a feminist, but today I walked into the dressing room and said, I'm wearing this because I'm giving Wednesday Addams. Now, I think you'll agree. Look at it again, audience.
Very nice, Debs. Strong Wednesday Addams energy.
Working now, it. What it is, if you're listening at home, it's a black sequined mini with a little black jacket, and then a lot of white Chanel-style pearls. I'm a feminist, but she was quite a bit of a Nazi. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm sorry. She was very stylish. So, I mean, I think we're allowed to wear black and white, even though she was a Nazi, but she did bring it in because she was raised in a convent. Before that, black was only for mourning. She did bring it in. I'm also wearing, and this is uncharacteristic, I think you'll agree, like black tights with a sort of, it's not really a Doc Marten, but it's got that vibe, but it's more like a school shoe.
Lady boot.
It's exactly. It's a brogy lady boot. Mm. What would be more appropriate is if I were to dress like the headmistress of Nevermore Academy. Is it Nevermore?
Don't know.
Yeah. Nevermore Academy. Yeah. But I have decided to go Wednesday Addams.
Great.
And I feel powerful. I feel like I could just stare at someone and their head could explode.
Yeah. What's unfeminist about that? Because you're like a gothic child.
I guess because I'm... I don't know that my icons should be children. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. Why am I trying to look like a kid? She's basically a moody teenager, Wednesday Addams, who doesn't really know herself yet, and has got.
She's got her own series, though.
She has.
She's got her own Netflix series. My son keeps begging to watch it.
She's got barriers up. You know, she doesn't know herself yet. So there are feminist components to Wednesday Addams, but I feel I should be mentoring her. I should be helping her with her GCSEs. Yeah. I shouldn't be going, oh, can I look like I'm in school uniform? Yeah, what's wrong with me? But I don't care because I love it.
I think you look cool as shit.
Thank you.
That's not unfeminist at all. I had a much less cool version, like a little moment like that recently. So I really love weightlifting. And at the moment it's very cold. And I've been weightlifting in a jumper. And the other day I missed a lift because I was giggling so much because I realised actually with my weightlifting belt on over a jumper, 100% channeling Trunchbull.
Oh!
That's a vibe, isn't it? I'm not really sure I'm ready for that.
I think the Emma Thompson Trunchbull is so incredible. Like she's
so good.
But she's really got a kind of... There's a humanity behind the eyes. There's a pain there. She's not just like a villain. There's so much more going on.
Oh, she's extraordinary. She's brilliant.
I think it's an iconic performance.
And her voice, the use of her voice is really... Yeah, it's brilliant.
But better. It's incredible. Do you have an I'm a feminist part?
Yeah, sorry, got loads. I'm a feminist, but I got a new passport pic this week. and it made me Google neck transplants.
What?
It's all to do with a failure about positive self-talk. It made me Google neck transplant. I looked like some meat that someone had left out in a blizzard, and then someone else had popped two small coals on the top of for eyes. I looked so meaty in this passport picture, it could have turned a boomer vegan.
But your whole sort of your most famous, most glorious show is called Hench.
It doesn't mean that I want to look like that.
You look incredible.
I love looking hench, but my neck in that photo is wider than a swimming pool. My 7-year-old son couldn't unassisted swim the width of my neck in that photo. I don't look like I look in that photo now. There's no point looking at me now, Debs. Don't argue, because there's two more of these. What's your next one?
Your neck is perfectly in proportion with your shoulders and your head, and that photo, whatever it said, was...
I'll show you it later, and we can all have a laugh.
Okay. I'm a feminist, but when I came into the dressing room tonight and said, I'm giving Wednesday Addams, I was hoping it would come... I was hoping, to be honest, someone would mention it before I had to. But nobody did, and so I just had to bring it up, which I thought that's a bit disappointing, because there were a bunch of people in the dressing room who could have said it. Could have said, wow, look at what you're wearing. You look like Wednesday Addams. But they didn't. They didn't. So I had to, again, compliment myself. And this started a really intersectional conversation with Chloe Petz, who's our incredible guest for this evening. She's an amazing comedian. We were talking about Wednesday Addams being an outcast, which I really... It's really great and really interesting. But also, they are like werewolves and stuff. So... And Chloe went, yeah, well, like, what are they living on? She went, like... They've got to live on human blood, haven't they? Werewolves and vampires. That's the whole thing about them. And we had this huge intersectional feminist conversation in which Chloe Petz finally entered with, I think we need to have a conversation about ethically sourced human blood. And I was like, of all the things we could be talking about in the dressing room.
I loved it. I'm a feminist, but I've got a new passport pick this week. And I failed to maintain positive self-talk about it because in the pic, I look like an advert for vitamin D tablets and cosmetic gel reduction. And that's in my life for 10 years now. So now the only person I'm showing that passport to is border security staff or a casting director, but only if they're specifically casting for the lead in something where they're looking for a pale, stoned murderer.
I'm sure it's lovely.
No.
I'm a feminist... But the other night I had to do karaoke and it was Christmas karaoke and I chose Santa Baby and Fuck You All, Stop Judging Me, It's You. I said I'd do a feminist version of the lyrics, but then I didn't.
I love it.
There's nothing satirical about Santa Baby. It's just feeding into every stereotype the patriarchy wants me to be that I don't want to be except during the three choruses of that song. Sometimes, isn't it? Just to be, you know, I've often
said
it.
You can mix it up. You can sing it in other styles. You don't have to sing it sexily.
Oh, that's
you
a thought.
You do a West Country folk version. Oh, no one's getting a boner over that. Santa baby. Bring me something down the chimney tonight.
So like my combine harvester type thing. Yeah. Or a kind of a head-banging one. I could do a sort of...
Santa baby!
Except for St. Mario the Dream!
That did get, I'm afraid that gave me a boner. I found that more sexy than the OG.
Okay, I'm gonna come up with a version that's a dominatrix version. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna be like, Santa baby, slip a sable under the tree right now on your knees. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Lovely business. I'm a feminist, but I got a new passport picture this week.
Tell me more.
And no one is ever allowed to look at me from the front when my face is neutral ever again.
Oh.
And no, I can't just go and get it done again because I'm so vain. This is already my third attempt and each try costs £13.99. Where does one go to buy shares in Snappy Snaps?
I am a feminist, but I have to admit, I have also spent a lot of money on passport photos back in the day. But do you know what I found?
One of them, she put them through the whole system, yeah. And one eye was closed.
Yeah. But do you know what I've discovered? Do you know what I've discovered? Do you know what you're allowed to use?
A mirror? So, I don't even bother with that.
No.
Every, I don't know why I...
Do you know what you're allowed to use? If you... Because it's all digital now, right?
Yeah.
So if you have had, which I know you have, say your hench headshots where you look very beautiful and made up, but as long as you're not smiling, you can just edit around that with and put that into the full white border.
You're not allowed earrings. There's so many rules. Yeah, it's got to be straight on. I'm not straight on in any photo I've ever chosen to look at again.
But next time you go for your headshots, you just get a straight-on passport photo with the beautiful light, with the makeup, all of that, and that, you then pop it into that format you're allowed to do.
Deborah, I am not someone who's ever going to go for a makeover before a passport photo. You've known me for long enough.
You get professional shots done by proper
photographers. Yes, once a year. Because it's part of my job.
I'm saying,
I have begun to enjoy that process. But yeah, save those.
And also, everyone hates their passport photo. Just give us a cheer if you like your passport photo.
Well done.
Okay,
good.
All right. Well, those people are annoying. Yeah. All right.
Live from King's Place in London, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist. With me, Deborah Francis-White, guest co-host Jessica Foster-Q, and our very special guest, Chloe Pets, with music from Grace Petrie. Hello, 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 King's Place! It's the last Guilty Feminist of the year. Here we are. Last year, do you remember last Christmas when I gave you my heart and then the very next day? No, do you remember last Christmas when it got all COVID-y at this point and then we all had to retreat in and we had to cancel campus Christmas? And this year we just had campus Christmas. Woo! Just give us a cheer if you came. Woo! Well, the rest of you have got it to listen to on the podcast. It was so much fun. It was absolutely brilliant. And we raised about 10 grand box office. Woo! For the Say It Loud Club, who were run for and by LGBTQ+ refugees. Everyone on the bill was queer. We had LGBTQ+ refugees on the bill. It was absolutely fantastic. And we also had Despicable Daisy come over from Dublin. She came over fully pregnant, and she brought her amazing capes, and she sold those capes, and we also made a few grand from capes, which is really how I like to fundraise, is through sparkly capes. That is all I would do, really, if I could, is just, I would just be a professional cape, not even maker, I don't want to sew, I would just dream up capes, Daisy would make them, and the end. That would be how I would fully make my living if I were allowed. But I am so thrilled to also be here on this stage with a microphone. Of course, if I just dreamt up capes at home, I wouldn't get to do this fun part where I come and talk to you and even touch you like this. I did the back of hands because I felt... Yeah, I just felt that was less COVID-y. But is it? It probably isn't. Just give us a cheer if you listen to The Guilty Feminist. Give us a cheer if you don't know what you're at. So notice how those cheers sound less empowered, less feminist, if you will. Who was it cheering here? You both cheered. You both don't know where you're at. You listen in the car. Oh, you do know?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I thought you look like you know because you're sitting in the second row and you're wearing a jumper that says Slay the Patriarchy. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, you've got to Slay the Patriarchy as well. Who's selling... And Slay is spelt like Christmas Slay, just to be clear. Sorry, I thought we were sold out and we were a little bit light on. And it's because all these people are late because... I don't know, have you been fighting the patriarchy? Have you? Is that why you're late?
Fighting the Tories and the train strikes.
Fighting the Tories and the train strikes, yes. Oh, yes, that's true. There'll be some people who can't get here because of train strikes. Thank you, welcome, come in. Is someone doing Slay the Patriarchy? Because you've got the same jumper in a different colour.
The internet's
doing it. I've heard of them. They're great, the internet, aren't they? Do you know what, though? So problematic in some ways, amazing in others. Can you imagine being as polarised as the internet? You'd fall apart. You'd explode. Why doesn't the internet explode? Oh, I think it is. Elon Musk.
Well, listen, just give us a cheer if you're wearing some other kind of feminist jumper. Or paraphernalia, yes. You're wearing a T-shirt that says, "Unexplained public laughter disrupts the patriarchy." I love that shirt because it's mine. What that's about is people would always tweet and say, "Oh, I was laughing so much at the gym, people were staring at me when I was listening to the podcast," or "I was laughing so much on the train, a man asked if I was okay." And that's why we made those shirts. Unexplained public laughter disrupts the patriarchy. It's patriarchal forces go, "What's going on over there? Someone's just laughing madly, insanely, wildly." Anybody else? There's a Choose Love shirt. Yes, there is. Thank you very much. Anyone else got any feminist paraphernalia on? No. People have come. But are you wearing a feminist T-shirt in your heart?
Yes.
Yes, excellent. What does it say? It's not very well written. I'm asking people for a low-level act of feminism that will intimidate nobody. Just something you've done where other people think, "I can do better than that." And that encourages your fellow feminists. So has anyone got anything pathetic that they've done? Yes?
I've just spilled my water.
Spilled your water. How is that a feminist act? So I'm looking for something like...
I'm not ashamed of it.
I'm not ashamed of it. Excellent. I've made a mess and I'm unashamed. This is good. This is strong. That's strong. Absolutely. I've made a mess and I'm not going to be like, "Oh no, I'm so sorry." If someone, of course, trips and falls, then we will look back on this differently. But let's act as if that's not going to happen. Anyone else got anything they want to share? Yes?
I went to my friend's house in incredible knee-high sparkly boots and I knew he would want to take me to take them off because he's very fussy and I didn't.
Oh.
And then when he commented, I was like, "But they're great. And your girlfriend said I could keep them on."
Oh. So you went to a friend's house in knee-high sparkly boots. You knew he would say "shoes off house." You said, "I do not respect that man because your girlfriend said I can keep them on."
Yeah. Sisterhood.
Yeah, that's the sisterhood. The sisterhood at work. That's some extremely low-level feminism going on there. That's what I've asked for. That's what I've asked for. Has anyone got anything you could go worse, higher, lower, or the same? Yes. Recently quit your job.
With a really toxic male CEO.
With a toxic male CEO.
And I accepted a new offer.
And I accepted a new offer from a place. I'm saying this for the podcast, by the way, just so you know.
With two female founders.
Gone to a fit place with two female founders. Excellent work. Phenomenal. You've told the toxic boss to sod off. And you've gone and you're working with women.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I doubled my salary.
And you doubled your salary. Come on. Happy Christmas to you. Thank you very much. That's better than spilling your water and going, "Fuck you, floor. You're probably made by a patriarchal, powerful man." This is some good work. Anyone got anything they need help with? Yes? Oh, no, you don't need help. But quickly, go anyway, because I've picked you now. You've got a Santa hat. Oh, I love that. She said, "I listen to your podcast all the time and every time I come, I bring someone new." Oh, my God. You're like a disciple. This is wonderful. And you're wearing a Santa hat. Look, you're reclaiming that masculine, patriarchal, old man Christmas symbol. You're modernising it. That's right. Anyone got anything they need help with? Yes? Oh, this sounds good. Come out and say it into the mic. Okay. Just give her a big round of applause. What's your name?
Bethany.
Okay, Bethany, tell the audience here and at home.
So I run a small charity called RefuNet that matches refugees and asylum seekers with online volunteer tutors. And we really, really need some more volunteer tutors at the moment.
Excellent. And this is for language skills or anything?
So mostly English for speakers of other languages, but also maths and science. And at the moment, we particularly need help with people that are preparing for their GCSEs. Super flexible. So it's like 1 hour a week. You decide the time with the student. And then we're here to support people that have any questions.
Wonderful. Thank you. So any GCSE subjects, is anyone here qualified to tutor GCSE? So if you did it at A level, you could probably tutor a GCSE, I would say. Especially if you did a degree, just give us a cheer. Woo! What? Just shout out subjects you can do.
Maths.
English. I could probably do some maths, actually. I know it's not for me, but just to keep... If your student cancels 1 week, just I probably could do with maths. I'm not very numerate. I don't really care, honestly. Someone else could do it. French? Do you need French? Who could do French?
We don't really need French.
You don't need French. What do you need?
English, math, science.
English, math, science. Just give us a cheer if you did A level or degree English. Woo! Yeah, loads of my audience have did an English degree. We don't know. We're stumbling around in life with a degree in fucking Jane Austen and some old white man poems. Yeah. We might as well put it to use. Okay, great. Just maths? Science? Just give us a cheer now if you've got 1 hour a week, even for like, how many, what would be the minimum weeks you could do?
3 months.
3 months. So 1 hour a week for 12 weeks. Just give us a cheer. Yeah, okay, you got quite a lot here. But if you're listening at home, how do they get in touch?
You can contact us. Our website is refunet.co.uk, which is R-E-F-U-N-E-T. And we're on social media, Refunet on Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn.
Wonderful. Please get in touch. That's a wonderful thing to do. And with that, I think we're ready to start the show. Are you ready to meet my incredible co-pilot for this evening? Then put your hands together and make wonderful woo-hooing noises for a guilty feminist favourite. It's the one and only Jessica Foster-Q.
Thank you. Lovely to be here doing stand-up on a guilty feminist. It's been a while. I've been very busy. I've been on a tour of my show Wench. I've had a really great fun time with it, but it did actually, as a tour, not the show. Very much enjoyed doing the show every night. Lovely people that came to the show going, ha ha ha, that bit was all fine. Unfortunately, I think the act of doing the tour created, I don't know what the science word for it is, I'm going to go for a curse. It became cursed. Don't believe me? Buckle in. The tour begun on September the 8th. Uh-oh, dead queen. Yeah? I'm so sorry. If that's your reaction to that, you're going to need to relax. There's more on that. Loads of other manifestations of the curse. I should add that apart from the queen, no human or creature was harmed during the curse of Wench. Okay, no one was harmed. Loads of just mad stuff happened. Like, do you remember in mid-October there's a great big fire in a building site in Leeds on a Saturday the 15th of October? I did that. Coventry had a big fire inside the building. Only place where the curse manifested once the tour had already, once the show had already begun, Cambridge. I had to have a couple of coked up surveyors chucked out for heckling. I know, you didn't expect that in my audience, basically. Some of you have never met me, but you would. Obviously, it's Cambridge, so you expect a couple of surveyors. But, all right, there's some in. But you don't expect gacked up ones. That's not the sort of people who come to my tour shows, basically. If you've never heard of me, my audience is mainly made up of women in dungarees, and that's no bad thing. 90% of the audience will have access to, if not their own allotment. I'm not interested in people heckling all the way through it. That's just not how it works. These guys were horrid. There's just two men. They're just heckling all the way through it. And in the end, I sort of, you know, I kept stopping and trying to talk to them at one point and went, look, I can tell there's no malice. And one of them went, oh, no, there's malice. I have to kick them out. Anyway, my favourite manifestation of the curse was Aldershot. Imagine if that was just the end of the sentence. No, I like Aldershot. What happened there was, I was an hour and a half late for my own tour show. Best reason ever for being late for anything, actually, guilty feminist. Swan in the road. Yeah. As I said, relax, the swan's fine. Far as I'm aware, thriving. It wasn't just any old swan, big boy. Not just any old road either, M25. And I can tell you, the first thought is probably, well, that swan has taken the Queen's death very hard. No. Actually, if anything, I have front row seats for the swan. As a car pulled to a stop, you know, the traffic sort of got completely stopped on the motorway. I thought, oh, bloody hell, it's one of them classic car-on-car accidents somewhere up ahead. No, swan in the road. And brilliant news for me, the swan was right by my car. I got to see all of this, right? And the swan didn't look sad. Look. Very chuffed to be in the road, very confident, very much at home in the road, really owning the road. What was great about that was not only did you get to see a swan close up from within the safety of your own car, lovely to see a swan looking so confident and at home, but then I got to see two policemen try and capture the swan.
I don't love authority, and I just enjoyed to see this. I think we can safely assume from the policeman's general demeanour that swan capture doesn't come under their main training. It was brilliant. They were terrified. It's tiptoeing over it. They had a neon jacket each. They're trying to throw over the swan. A swan was just sort of just taking longer strides away from them. The swan had all the status. It took them fucking ages, about 25 minutes it took them to eventually capture the swan. One of them finally got its jacket over its head. Then what was brilliant about that is that the policeman who picked the swan up definitely underestimated the weight of a swan. He could barely clean it if you're aware. He's like, he'd gone purple, if you're listening, he'd gone thoroughly purple. He got it to like waist height and then he eventually sort of shimmied it up. And you think out of the two policemen, that's going to be the one who's the most emasculated in this situation. No, his friend's job was to hold the swan's neck. So that was one of my favourite things I've ever seen an authority figure do as well. And they sort of, as a team, had to sort of waddle it over to the verge, hump it into the verge, and then pin it there for ages while they waited for assistance. They didn't have a swan-ready van. And what I loved about watching that was just really looked like they were resting it. So first night of my tour, the Queen perished. What a storm. What a storm of a night it was for everyone, I'm sure. I hadn't realised what was going on, I'll be honest with you. My lovely people who run my tour contacted me in the afternoon and said, something's up with the Queen. I think everything will run as normal. Turns out to be a very loose approach to how the world works. So I didn't know the gravity of what was going on. So it meant that when I got in my car, I did turn on the news, obviously to find out a bit more about this situation. I still didn't understand the imminency of the threat of... what I'm saying is I didn't know the code words. Did you? I didn't know the code. I didn't know the word comfortable meant actually been dead for hours. I didn't know that. I'll be honest, I'm pissed off to have learnt that, frankly, because it's ruined my best describing word for pretty much all my clothes. I got to the venue. I won't say where it was. We can just sort of generally say horribly close to Windsor. And the staff there were like, so you've arrived then. So just to sort of check then, do you want to go ahead with your comedy show? And I don't know if I read the energy of that right. I think I said something like, fuck, yeah. And they were like, well, it doesn't look like the Queen is going to die, so and we will have to announce it over the tannoy as soon as she dies, OK, even if that's in the middle of the show. OK, yeah. Just sort of wrapping my head around that. They went, well, just to let you know, we will test the tannoy, so you'll get an idea of what the tannoy sounds like, OK? So you can... I was like, OK, thank you. All right. Woohoo, first night of the tour. OK. But, you know, if you remember that night, it was about 6:30 when we officially announced things, right? So it did come over the tannoy. It was before my show. I was in the foyer with what turned out to be, you know, most of my audience, right? And I was standing there sort of ordering some food at my tour support, and... the tannoy came on and announced the Queen's death, but I don't know when they last used the tannoy. but what happened is when they turned it on, it came on with this noise. Bing bong! That's not a sad noise, is it? That's an objectively happy noise, isn't it? Shut your eyes and try and feel sad. Bing bong! That's a happy, not everyone in there just perked up. You're like, oh, fuck, I'm perking up. You just do. Bing bong. Half the people in there instinctively went to undo their seatbelt and remove their overhead luggage. Bing bong. And then the panic in the girl's voice, obviously, because she wasn't. It's no one, none of us, her, least of all her, expecting a fucking bing bong. So she then comes over the tannoy going, I'm just to let everybody... no one had given her a script. It's a shit show, this. You strap this. She went, oh, just to let you know the terrible news that Queen Elizabeth II has died, actually. So that's sad, isn't it? Can you just make sure you're all really respectful and silent for a few minutes of joining us for respectful silence now? No one had any time for any respectful silence, so they whacked on a crackly old version of God Save the Queen. Try and feel sad through this. It wasn't sad. As soon as that finished, I was like, finally, a moment for feel sad. In the staff, the bar staff genuinely shouted, I think they're just testing the tannoy.
I knew I couldn't laugh out loud, but my whole body was shaking with repressed laughter, where internally I was thinking, I think if it was just a test, they wouldn't have used the word, she's dead. And then we went into what I would consider to be one of the weirdest weeks of my life in terms of my perception of the nation I live in. What a fucking bizarre thing all of that was. We went, oh, cancel fun, cancel all the fun. The news, I hate the news telling me how to feel. The news are like, you're sad, cancel fun, you're sad. Instead, we're going to have rolling news coverage of pundits, pink-trousered fucking gammony pundits telling us how fucking fun she was while we cancel all your fun and most of your jobs, even if you're self-employed, even at the fucking pointy end of a cost of living crisis, while we all talk about how fun she was. Stop having fun! You're sad! I hated it. But what was mad... Wait! Don't clap me! I went along with it! And so did all of you! That's what blew my mind. We had 4 or 5 days then where I honestly couldn't believe it. I was doing it. Everyone was doing it. Everyone, I sort of wandering around to myself going, we all are doing it, right? We are all genuinely pretending to be personally affected. And I did too. I did it as well. I walked around like that. For the listeners, sad face. Even I wasn't brave enough to start the hashtag not my nana. I got some rude stuff about the king, but I reckon I'll leave it there.
Jessica Fosterkew, everybody!
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hello, Guilty Feminist of Dublin, calling all gay Michaels. We will be back in Dublin, but this time at the Sugar Club on the 24th of January, 7:30 p.m., and I will be coming over with Alison Spittle. We'll have some incredible local Dublin guests, as always. We will also be back at King's Place in London on the 26th of January. We are doing 2 episodes back to back. One is with Carrie-Anne Lloyd talking about grief and her new book. She is an absolute master at this topic. So come along, because it's a wonderful, warm place to discuss it. Whether you've experienced grief, are experiencing it now, or will experience it, this will be a wonderful show. Also, we will be at Rose Theatre in Kingston on Sunday, the 29th of January. That's 5 p.m. It's an early show so that you can be tucked up in bed by 10 o'clock any evening with a cup of cocoa. To book tickets, go to guiltyfeminist.com and click on live shows, and you can get tickets for any of those shows. While you are at it, could you also just jump on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review? You can leave a review for any episode. Ideally, make it 5 stars. Rate, review, and also subscribe if you don't subscribe or follow, because it helps other people find the podcasts and it reminds you that we're on. While you're there, if you could subscribe to Media Storm, which is our investigative journalist podcast, it has won so many awards. It's only in its second series and it's won and been nominated for so many awards. Most recently, the two hosts, Matilda Mallison and Helena Waddy-Up, were nominated for a British Journalism Award for Best Interviewers. That's against all the journalists in the whole of the UK. So, it's really worth a listen. You are going to learn about so many incredible feminist things you never knew you needed to know. Also, while you're there, could you please subscribe to Fock It Up, Comedy Club, which is Kima Bob's incredible show, you are going to discover so many exciting new talented femmes of color who are comedians. So please subscribe to both of those things. If you could leave a review, rate it, give it 5 stars and tell other people about it. Also, if you'd like an ad-free version of this show, please support us on Patreon. And now back to the podcast.
Our guest today is one of the most exciting rising comedy stars on the circuit. She is an alumna of the prestigious Pleasance Comedy Reserve, has been shortlisted for the BBC Comedy Award, and is co-founder of The LOL Word, a queer comedy collective that hosts monthly sellout shows with the finest female and non-binary queer acts. Please welcome to the stage the incredible Chloe Petz.
Well, hello. My name is Chloe. I had a sort of revelation about myself really recently that the most at home that I have ever felt is on a wedding dance floor. And I think that is because my favourite mode of transport is via knee slide, sort of surrounded by unprecedented levels of cleavage. So I think what happens at a wedding is I like would largely identify as a woman, but at a wedding I identify as a man with a tie on his head. I just fucking love it. And I know that I'm a man at a wedding because I do that thing that all blokes do at weddings, which is I make best friends in the entire world with another man that I will never see again, okay? The wedding is to the man what the club toilet queue is to the woman, okay? And this man, because, like, the only weddings that I've been to are heterosexual weddings, and I just get so hetero in that setting that the man that I befriend, in any other circumstance, I'd be like, this is possibly one of the worst people I've ever met in my fucking life. But at a wedding, he'll come up to me and be like, hi, my name's Josh. My interests are Bitcoin and finance. And I'll be like, he's perfect. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about the wedding. And I'm like a sort of like, I'm like kryptonite to straight men at a wedding. Every wedding I go to, there's like a conveyor belt of straight blokes that are trying to befriend me. And that's not to be a brag. I honestly can't work out what it is they like about me. But I think it's because like they've never seen one of me before. You know? They're sort of looking at me like, she's like Dave, but with a vagina. What? Like, she's funny, but I don't want to fuck her. What is this? I also think that I'm, like, really useful to the straight man at a wedding in the bouquet throw. I think I'm a useful ally, right? We all know what the bouquet throw is at a wedding, don't we? Yeah? It's for those that might not know, it's what happens is the single women at the wedding will get onto the dance floor at some point in the night, and then the bride will throw a bouquet over her head into this crowd of single women, and whichever one catches it is the next one to be sold off. Okay? And I'm obviously outstanding at the bouquet throw. In the last year, I've been to 3 weddings, 3 bouquets caught, of course. For the listeners at home, it's because I'm fucking massive, right? It's really funny, like, when you get onto the wedding dance floor, sort of, with my gender presentation, again, for the people at home, very masculine, because you sort of see the faces of all these, like, little hetero cis women just sort of fall. And I've never seen a bunch of, like, boring straight women arguing for trans inclusion in sport. So readily, like as soon as I come on, like trying to catch that bouquet, they're like, "Are you sure this is the right category for you?" Do you not want to go and do drinking with the men? No, give me my fucking flowers. And then what will happen is the bride will throw the flowers over her head, and all of the straight men that I've befriended will run round and sort of lift me like a rugby line out. I get what I want, which is to catch my flowers. They get what they want, which is not to propose to their boring girlfriend, Emma. So, as I say, I'm very masculine. But recently I've sort of... I feel like I've become comfortable enough in my masculinity that I feel comfortable sort of embracing bits of my femininity that I hadn't once sort of embraced. Because even like things that you would traditionally call feminine, sorry. I've always done quite masculine, like menstruation. I know that that isn't just women that do it, but traditionally we would call it a feminine thing. Not the way I do it. I do it strong, consistent, powerful, like my motor. But what happened the other day is my girlfriend, she asked me to go and get sanitary products for her. And usually I would be absolutely fine with this. I've been menstruating for well over 15 years. As soon as she asked me to do it, when I got to the aisle of Tesco where I had to get the sanitary products, I turned into the most confused, dozy boyfriend you've ever... I was going like, babe, I don't know what flavour to get, lemon or lime, what's going on? But yeah, I recently realised that I am trying to get more feminine. And I went to some of my friends had a nail painting party, because my friends are sort of hitting their 30s and like having a breakdown, essentially. You know what's going on? Trying to recapture their youth, just like sniffing gel pens, going around with Jane Norman bags. And I went to the party and was like, no, I'm not having my nails painted, not me. When I get my nails painted, I feel like a dog in socks. Do you know what? So I just don't know where I am. But they convinced me by going, like, it makes you better at fingering. I was like, sign me up. I've also been trying the feminine act of flirting with men. And I know that doesn't necessarily have to be feminine. Again, it can be masculine. Not the way that I do it. I become a lovely lady. Oh, God. The way I flirt with men, I'm fluttering my eyebrows, throwing them my nail-painted fingers. But I think what happens in that situation is when these blokes, like blokes that I've sort of flirted with, straight men that I've flirted with, they'll, if they ever try to sort of go any further than the flirt and take it to something physical, I'll be like, back off, mate, I'm not gay. no fucking homo, mate, back off. Unless a gay man mistakes me for another gay man, in that circumstance, very much homo. Oh, God. That twink thinks I'm man enough to bum him. Yes, please. thank you so much. Cheers.
Chloe Pets, everybody.
Yes, please.
Come take a large seat. Thank you. That was brilliant. Wonderful to hear.
Well, thank you.
Fluttering my eyebrows.
Were you? Really you were nice. Fluttering your eyebrows at me?
No, just that line's going to tickle me forever.
Oh, that's so nice.
Really nice.
Well, it was a very new bit, and I felt so comfortable with you guys that I thought I'd give it a go.
Yeah.
And fluttering really your eyebrows.
Nice. Really nice.
That'll go in it. My eyebrows. Did I say eyebrows?
You said eyebrows. Did you not say that on purpose?
I said it on purpose. Very
fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you mean eyelashes? Because we thought it was eyebrows, and we thought that was a really great turn of phrase.
Yeah, it was. Meant to be.
I'm classic feminine flirting.
I'm the most innovative comic mind of my generation, of course. I'm fluttering my eyebrows. That's so funny that
Let's
I said
Let's all
that.
Have a go at it. Yeah.
I think it was Freudian, though.
No, I meant it.
No, but I mean, if you didn't mean it's Freudian, it's like your brain is so creative, it can't help but invent comedy while you're doing comedy.
That's even more of a compliment than if I'd done it on purpose. It was that one. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. That's what I was thinking. Chloe, your tour show is called Intransience.
No, not in.
Not in.
No, Transience.
Transient.
Sorry, let me take that again. You never heard that.
Don't laugh.
Yeah, because they do. If I do a pickup, they laugh and that tells the audience, and I'd be like, why is that funny? She must have made a mistake.
Do you listen back to the episodes and know that this all gets cut out?
I used to listen to every single edit and make my notes, but it got to the point where I couldn't anymore. Partly because I think Tom generally knows what I would and wouldn't go for, but I just got exhausted listening to myself. And
yeah.
I started to hate my voice. And but if it's yours, you know what it's like. We all, listen, as feminists, obviously we love ourselves. However, there is a little bit of everyone that finds themselves nauseous making, isn't there? Like, don't you? We all kind of have a bit of...
I found myself disgusting until I saw what I looked like in my reflection. I was fluttering my eyebrow.
No, you know, that thing of listening to yourself again. If you're a podcaster and you listen to every edit, you're like, oh, fucking hell, this again. You again.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
shut
yeah.
The fuck
yeah,
up.
Especially if you tell the same story on more than one episode. On my podcast, when I listen, I go, you're telling them about that again, are you?
It's the worst.
You can bore yourself.
You're 52 episodes a year. Of course, sometimes you repeat yourself, but people don't. People are too
fucking polite. Long way of saying no. She doesn't listen back.
This is why I don't listen back.
Fair.
This is an example of it, Chloe.
Yours.
Can you even remember what the pickup was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a pro.
Amazing.
Chloe, your tour show is called Transients.
That's right.
Did you say nice rack?
No.
Someone said nice rack.
I'm a feminist, but nice rack.
Is that, I mean, I appreciate it. If that's in fact what you said.
That's my favourite thing that anyone's podcast ever said on the looked off feminist. Into the distance and went, nice rack. If I go into the guilty feminist book, I can't even remember. I think I just went, that's right.
Sounded like nice rap. Anyway. Oh, do you have an I'm a feminist spot? Do you have an I'm a feminist spot?
Yeah, I could do one.
Great. Feminist spot,
I've just
nice
done it. That was written in the notes. I'm a feminist, but I don't watch the England women's national football team for their talent.
Oh!
Very nice.
Watch it for the talent, not their talent.
They're all so fucking peng. Right? Every single time a beautiful lady... every time a lady steps onto a football pitch, she becomes the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in my whole entire life.
Do they identify as ladies? I feel like they might not say ladies. Ladies football.
They do when I'm talking about it, Deborah. So I really don't like this character that I've come on as. I do think the problem with...
It'll be disappointing
we've really,
if this is
the... filling out the character for you by hearing things you didn't say, like nice rack.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a great game to play. So, like, everything Chloe says, we just go, did you just ask me out?
That's a game called gaslighting, yeah. Deborah.
Sorry.
Really fun game to play, as I said.
I love that game.
Okay. I mean, we'd have to be in a comedy agreement that that's what we were doing, and therefore it wouldn't be gaslighting. I'm now gaslighting you into thinking I'm not gaslighting you.
You're a master of the genre.
Chloe.
Yeah.
Your tour show is called Oh, fucking hell.
This can be the whole chat, just how long it takes you to get
honestly,
that.
Keep this
and then the whole podcast will end with you going, Chloe, your show's called Transients, and Chloe go, yeah, come
nice
see
rack
it.
Nice rack.
End of pod. End of
Chloe,
pod.
Your tour show's called Nice Rack.
that would be a good name for the next show.
It would be, actually, especially if you were there like with a gun rack or a hat rack or something like, you know.
Like, I'm a
pun,
oh, pun
on rack. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Can we... Oh, I've got a good idea.
Yeah.
Why don't the three of us do a late night improv show called at Next Fringe called Nice Rack, where we've got a list, a sort of props on a rack.
On a rack.
Right? Lovely. And then a rack, just to be clear, not Iraq. That's going into verging into something else.
We probably can't fit a rack into the end.
Just to be clear. So... we have a bunch of like coats and props and things, but each night the audience have to bring things in to put in on the rack. We don't see what they are.
Yeah.
So when we come out onto the stage,
that's good.
You could make it really meta by putting a pair of tits on the rack.
Someone should do that. Would you come to this late night improv show as Deborah? Yeah, you have to bring something. So it could be, you'll get it back at the end. So it could be your coat or it could be a kebab you just got or something.
Your
like that.
Tits.
You've asked them if they'll come, but you haven't asked me.
Chloe,
I'm meant to be an inaugural member of Nice Rack.
Would you, with Jess and me, next Fringe, do a late night show? It could just be a one-off, or it could be a little season. Would you be part of the improv group Nice Rack?
Yeah, all right.
Yay! Fuck on!
Right.
Chloe, the thing is, I know that I like sign up to that now, but you're so like driven... as a person that I know that this bit will turn into a reality I'll find myself in the
problem,
next episode.
It's like, my problem. I can't
doing a show called Nice Rack tonight.
Now I feel I have to do it now.
Yeah, we'll
I
do
really
it.
I really want to do it. But we could just do like a one-off for charity or something like that.
Yeah, all right.
We're doing it for the whole month. Are you producing it? What's your name?
Lulu.
Lulu's in the front row. She's producing Nice Rack now. Whole month.
That's not a sentence. Okay, is it? Stand alone. Lulu's producing Nice
she's
Rack
producing
now.
She's producing a Nice Rack.
I mean, Lulu, if you don't mind me saying, you do have a Nice Rack.
Whoa! Deborah's taking on the character now.
I also thought it, but I also, I'm a feminist, so I didn't say it.
I feel, Lulu and I had eye contact that implied you should say that now.
I didn't have eye contact.
You were feeding me, weren't you? That was a comedy feed, wasn't it?
She sort of did a little bit of this.
I can't look at her anymore.
She sort of presented... I'm not looking at Lulu. She did a bit of a carry-on, like, cleavage moment. We knew what we were doing.
What's happened is you had to do a pickup, and Jess and I have just derailed it so completely that everything has to stay. You can't cut
everything has
that.
To stay. Lulu has to be an inaugural member of Nice Rack. Despite the fact I can never look at her again, now we've done that to her, I'm more likely to look at my new passport picture again than I am to look at Lulu.
We'll all stand in the picture, I think for the poster, we should all have the hold the rack in front of us, breast height, with little props on. It'll be great.
Really
Chloe,
nice.
Your tour show is called Transients.
That's right. You nailed that.
What? They called me One Take Francis White. Why did you call it Transients?
Well, initially when I was trying to name the show, I named the show at the beginning of the lockdown, actually. Yeah. And I just thought, Transients, that sounds so smart. It's going to be about the mutability of time. It's going to be about all of this stuff. And that was basically, yes.
What does mutability mean?
Integrally, I don't know. So this is the problem, is that I thought I would get so much reading done during that first lockdown that I didn't get done. Yeah. So then it just became a show about toilet humour, really. But I think toilet humour in a clever way, because it's about my experiences of entering women's spaces as a sort of masculine person who's very tall, who I also wear a binder and stuff like that. So it's sort of about, it's a pun on trans science, I guess, and it's like my experiences as sort of, you know, I largely identify as a woman, but I have had some gender dysphoria and stuff like that. But it kind of doesn't matter, because it doesn't matter what I feel and how I feel about myself. It's more about how, when I enter those women's only spaces, I'm doing inverted commas quotations for the listeners at home. It's more about how other people perceive me and decide that they're allowed to act because of, you know, cultural conversations that are going on at the moment, and how that empowered they feel to sort of make comments and shit like that.
Yeah.
So,
Nice Rack was funnier. That's what I will say.
But it sort of is about... It's about the...
confines of gender.
And the gender presentation, gender identity, gender implications and projections. And in a world which is increasingly putting up barriers to trans people and creating suspicions around trans people, if you are not trans but you are also not gender conforming, what does that mean for you? Is that what the show's about?
Yeah, I suppose so, but I think it's more just like I wanted to basically like use my experience to basically like I guess befriend an audience that will often contain a lot of allies, but might contain people that are confused about that kind of thing, or have some questions, or a bit sort of have a knee-jerk reaction against trans people, and basically try and like befriend them and say, look, just trust me, like these are the experiences that I have. Like, if you don't think they're nice happening to me, then maybe they shouldn't happen to everyone, you know, and sort of using that as a means of like going into battle on this kind of thing. But going into battle feels like a bit of a weird phrase to say, because it feels more like the thing that I want everyone to do is just chill out. Everyone that doesn't have like a sort of hand in the trans issues, it's nothing to do with them. It's just like, why are you making it your problem? It's none of your business. Just piss off. Like, yeah, no one's... There's like a big panic around it, right? No one's trying to turn your kids trans. No one's trying to do anything shitty. They're just trying to go around and live their life. But yeah, it's turned into this big culture war that it doesn't need to be. I guess because it's just like a bunch of bored people that are, I don't know, feel like they want to be oppressed or something.
The number of people who have decided to make it their reason for their existence, their main thing. For whom it's utterly fucking irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre.
So sometimes I think, and tell me if this is problematic, and if it is, please, can we edit it out? But sometimes I think that, like, there's a certain like class of woman that has become so near like unoppressed in society that they still wish to participate, like they want to identify as oppressed. So they've chosen like trans people as the people that are like, is that unfair?
I mean, I would certainly say there are individuals within classes that have that feeling of, or that I think
there's definitely people who've got a hard on for feeling oppressed and victim-y. Yeah. 100%, and like that becomes their like a massive part of their identity.
Yeah, or it's a way of saying
it's quite an addictive thing because you get a lot of compassion.
Yeah,
I think it's also wanting to. I feel stronger with a team, and I tend not to use the word tribe anymore because I know it's problematic for people. But it's
I didn't. Heads
it's
up.
That it's
noted.
It's that I think it was so imposed on.
Too late, as per.
I think.
Stop saying tribe.
I think it's been so imposed by Western anthropologists onto Indigenous people that we tend to not say that anymore. But it's this sort of like, safety in numbers. If I create a team around me, then in order to have a team, I need to be saying who are we against and who do we exclude. But I think it is strange, the fear of trans people, given how few trans people there are.
Yeah.
And how already obviously marginalised trans people's lives are. And so I'm very interested in this show. And actually, we've got another guest tonight who's singing, who did a brilliant Edinburgh show that's in line with this show that I think might make a great co-discussion for the rest of this discussion. Are we down for that?
Yeah.
Then please,
I'm going to get a chair.
Welcome to the stage and to the conversation, the incredible Grace Petrie. She's brought her own chair.
Well, good evening, everybody.
Hello.
And listen, nice rack.
That's what I gleaned from backstage.
Seems to be the theme of tonight,
like
unintentionally.
Would you like to be in our improv group, Nice Rack?
Yes, and...
Hey!
She got the job.
She's ready.
Yes,
would you do improv songs?
Can we give it a different name?
Do you reckon you do improvised songs?
Well, Deborah, you've obviously forgotten the one time I tried on the podcast, and the answer is no. It went very badly.
Well, I reckon we could practice it. The reason I wanted to bring you in, Grace, is I saw your show, Butcher Do About Nothing, in Edinburgh, and I
didn't fuck that one up.
Amazing.
And I thought it would have been better if it was called Nice Rack, but...
many have said it.
Yeah. Or great arse. I don't know. These are just suggestions.
Arse? What's happening to the guilty feminist tonight? Fuck you, hell. The wheels have come
I've
off.
I've been on it for months.
Okay.
First one back. More guilty than feminist.
I think it is the influence of Jess Bosnick, let's be honest. What about I would, but would is spelled W-O-O-D?
Moving on.
Okay. I wanted to hear you and Chloe talk about this because your show was a real game changer for me. It was a real... I first saw your show in the airport I think it was like the Canberra airport or something like that. We were at the gate. It was just Grace and me. And Grace... I insisted Grace do the whole show. She needed more previews. And so I said, well, I'll be the audience. And we nearly missed the plane. We did the whole gate, but I was crying at the gate. People thought we were breaking up, I think. But also laughing a lot. It was lovely.
Deborah, you are like the taxi driver that's like, all right, you're a comedian, do us a joke then.
Yeah. Yeah, I made her do her whole...
You do a comedy show, do the whole show then.
I'm exactly like that.
But unlike most comedians in a taxi, I was like, oh, yes, please. I don't mind if I do.
And so I saw it there, then I saw it twice in Edinburgh, and it was absolutely brilliant. And I really wanted Grace to tour it so everyone could see it. And she was like, well, it's not really what I do. I'm a singer, and I'm going to go back to doing my singer-songwriter stuff. But I really would love you to record it as a special, because I think everyone should see it. But I wanted you and Chloe maybe to talk about some of the themes in it, because I just loved your piece, especially around your feelings as a butch lesbian. Mm. And... this sort of new wave coming up. And I wondered if, you know, if I stopped talking, would you and Chloe talk to each other about it?
Oh, it's like we're on a play date.
So nice. Bit of rough and tumble with the boy.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, it's
nice to see you.
Yeah, well, I was desperate to see your show, but we clashed, I think, in Edinburgh. So I'm still desperate. And I think I am. My girlfriend today informed me that we have a guest list to see your show in Norwich. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So I was gutted not to see it. But I do. When you were talking about it backstage, I was like, yeah, I feel like there's a lot of crossover between what we were talking about and stuff. And then, massively on point, I went to get a beer in preparation for coming on stage, and I got called sir at the bar. So it was really just like...
How does it make you feel when you get called sir?
Well, it's interesting, man. Like, there's a lot of my show is about this, actually, and about the sort of... I get misgendered as well, like, a lot of my life, and... I've really sort of been on a real journey with it, I suppose, and I have a bit in my show. I mean, I'm going to sort of try and be brief, but in the show it sort of has a context that makes it, again, seem less problematic. It might seem a bit problematic here, but I sort of have a bit about how there's a modern trend of sort of assuming that people go by they, and how I find that as someone who's kind of fought quite hard to stand comfortably in she, her, which I didn't for a long time. It took me years and years and years to stand comfortably there. Now I kind of feel quite defensive of, like, being a she, her. But then I sort of went from that into talking about transphobes and how, you know, teams and how easily we can all kind of feel defensive of our own little patch in the world, you know, and actually how the wisdom of that, I suppose, you know.
I love the bit where you said, I kind of get it, the fear of, is this being taken away in some way? But then you talked about that your desire to sort of hold on to your patch came out of the deep loneliness that you felt when you were younger. And how you felt about the younger generation really redefining the space. Do you know what I'm...
Yeah, and I suppose, I mean, like, ultimately, like, we have so much, we have such a massively more fluid understanding of gender and language around gender now than when I was a kid. We definitely just didn't, you know. When I was a kid, there just was no non-binary, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I know that there definitely were trans people that were obviously living significantly sort of harder lives, hopefully, than they are today. But the idea of, like, any kind of ambiguity around gender was not really a thing.
You certainly
know what
didn't
mean?
Have the language.
The language.
Didn't have the language, yeah.
And certainly people were non-binary, but we didn't have that language.
Sure, yeah, I suppose that's what I mean, is there wasn't a lot of kind of, yeah, we didn't have the sort of terms to put it into, but, you know, so for me, kind of, you know, being born in the late 80s and growing up in the 90s and the early noughties, I just was kind of receiving a message that I was an inadequate kind of girl. You know, and that was something that really took root in me for a really long time. And I've talked about that in my songs and stuff. And you know, now we do have so much more representation and nuance, and there's this massive fluidity around it. And that is wonderful. It really is wonderful. And then I suppose for people like me, you know, I'm in my mid-30s now, and I'm kind of looking around and going, I used to be the radical one, man. Like, I used to be on the cutting edge. And, like, now there's all these younger people coming up, you know, 15, 20 years after me. And they're kind of making me feel like this space that I fought for doesn't really need to be here. And my initial reaction to that was, like, that does make me feel quite threatened. But obviously the conclusion of it is, like, it's better. Like, this is what we fought for, right? We fought for a world in which everybody could be free and be who they are. And it's good that we're there, you know? Yeah. And, like... maybe it does make people like me feel a bit sad, but that doesn't make it bad.
I think I remember in your show you saying that 50% of young people...
Millennials
and Gen Zs, 50 or over 50% would not identify fully as straight. In some way, they'd say they were queer. And somebody...
One of them's in.
Yeah. And that you said... And you said, so, you know... there's not this so much, a need for this is a butch lesbian space. And I remember I was very moved by you saying, it feels like they're packing the party away and I've just got here. But if it means that young people don't have to be lonely the way that I felt, when I was young, because it's they're making the whole world a queer space. That's a wonderful thing. I don't need them to be lonely so that I can feel that the language I carved out or the club I carved out or whatever is still relevant.
I want to know how you feel when you're misgendered. I think it's an absolute minefield. You asked it as a question, but you didn't get
it. Yeah. Well, I think also that just bouncing off from what you said, Grace, like, I think I'm also just really grateful to the generation above me, because you, like, every generation probably looks at the generation lower than them and feels a bit resentful or a bit sad that they don't get that party. But the only reason we get the party is because of what you guys did before. And I think, you know, if you can see that as your legacy rather than the other side of it, which is where, you know, people get bitter and then that's where they might get transphobic or turfy, I don't know, then I think that's a great thing. In terms of when I get misgendered, I think I have very little control over how people perceive me, and I find it very interesting. I don't know how people perceive me. It just confuses me. But I'm going to get called whatever gender that person wants to call me. So I'd rather they just, like, fall in the middle and sit in their own, because it's not about me, it's about them. I'd rather they fall in the middle, sit in their own confusion and just call me they, rather than needing to categorise me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like sometimes when I'm called she or I'm called he and then someone corrects themselves and calls me she, I'm kind of like, why does it matter? Mm-hmm. Why does it matter? Because I know who I am and I feel very safe and comfortable in that, and I'm never going to be able to control the perceptions of all of you. So just, why don't you just embrace some more inclusive language, right?
Yeah, of course. And you know, it just makes me think again. I mean, like, you know, I went to A&E for something a couple of months ago, nothing bad. I just got something in my eye and I was like waiting there for hours and hours. And I was the only person in there. And I was increasingly worried that they had sort of, because when I arrived at the hospital, the first member of staff that greeted me said, you know, good evening, sir.
Yeah.
And I just didn't. Most of the time when I'm alone, I just don't correct people. Because again, I agree with you. It's not really about me. And then I kind of sat there.
It's an extraordinary effort time after time.
Yeah, it really
is. You're not feeling well. If you've got something in your eye.
Well, that's it.
Well, actually.
I know. I had a lot of eye stuff going on. It was really fit. and I was like sitting there waiting. And then I started to think, fuck, like, I wonder if, you know, someone's come out looking for a man in the waiting room, and you know what I mean? I started to think, oh, I wonder if this is logistically, if I've been miscategorized somewhere. And then I just, obviously, that just led on to, why the fuck do we do this? Mm. What is with sir? What is with madam? What need is there in the world to basically say to people the moment you see them, I have categorized you? We just don't need to do it. And we're so, and that's kind of, you know, like the thing, what you said in the dressing room is like, I'm going to bastardize what you said, but it was about legitimizing the conversation, right? We don't even need to be having the conversation about a lot of these things. And pronouns is one of these things. It's like, how is it the case that the planet is like on fire and we are spending so much time talking about pronouns? Like, guys, this fucking biggest fish to fry, literally, we're the fish, we're frying, you know?
I agree. I feel like if people are just allowed to say, this suits me the best.
Yeah.
This is what feels good for me. This is the name. Like, we don't mind when people change their names. You know, if I've got plenty of friends who was raised as one name, but as they got to a certain point, it didn't really suit them, and they took on their middle name or an abbreviation or a whole new name they just made up for themselves, or the name that someone called them at uni or something like that, and that's their name. And nobody goes, but that's not really who you are. Like, because they get, if you've changed your name from the one off your birth certificate, it's because it didn't fit you in some way, or you changed out of your name. But we are much less suspicious if someone's changed their name. We change our name when we get married, and no one's weird about that. Like, we take on a man's name from usually the man's name who gave it to us. As women, we're always walking around with kind of male appendages, like, you know, nomenclature appendages. Shit. No, okay, all right. You know what I mean? Wordy ones.
Sorry, I'm laughing at appendages.
Nice rack. Hi, Grace. Are you going to sing us a song?
Well, I thought I would sing you a song about politics.
Okay.
Because we are on the eve of a nurses' strike tomorrow. There's obviously lots and lots of strikes happening in Britain at the moment because we have a dreadfully corrupt government. And we need to show solidarity with the strikers, don't we? Do we not? So I thought I'd sing you a fairly old song that I wrote quite a few years ago. Now, it's the first song that I ever wrote about politics in the back in the days of austerity. Yeah, so obviously it's not relevant at all anymore. Yeah. Now, I wrote this song way back in 2010. I was trying to get rid of David Cameron. And it worked. But he was replaced by Theresa May. And I thought, what have I fucking done? Right? So, you know, I thought I better write some more songs and get rid of her, you know. And you know, it worked again. I mean, I think there were some other factors, but it was mostly my songs, I think. So, you know, I got rid of her. She was replaced by Boris Johnson. And I thought, well, it can't get any worse than that, right? So I wrote some more songs, got rid of Boris Johnson, and then, you know, I did not get a chance to write any songs about Liz Truss. London, I was not quick enough. Anyway, listen, up the workers, up the nurses, up the strikers, this is called Farewell to Wealth. It's never too late to recapture the benefits of Section 28, and it's never too wild to slash benefits for single mums. The only victim is the child, and oh, who's gonna be my Billie Jean King? And I'll say, who's gonna be my Harvey Milk? And on the steps of Parliament, well, they're demonstrating, but what's the use when they're all cut from the same Eton silk? I'll say farewell, farewell to welfare. And we've got a recession to beat. Let's put more money into the monarchy and a millionaire in Downing Street, and someone's got to foot the bill. Let's start with the disabled and the mentally ill. And if I keep my receipts, can I claim back the mistakes and the lives ruined by this government? Or in another 18 years of budget cuts and tears, will the people pay for those just like we pay your rent? And say farewell, farewell to welfare. So give me change, give me equality, give me a minister for women that don't fucking represent me. Give me a decent, honest Nick who's on the level. Until the first glimpse of power, he'll make a deal with the devil. And you tell me that this is democracy, and you tell me that it ain't no old boys club. And as the thousands march on Westminster, and look how quickly their demands are snubbed. And you ask me, where is the UFO? Well, they didn't let me in, so you'll find me in the pub, raising a toast to the ghost of welfare. And I used to dream of a Britain where I'd be proud to bring up kids. These days I'd settle for a Britain where I'd be allowed to bring up kids. And Mrs. May, if I may be so bold as to say that your archaic view of family holds no relevance today. And if you think that honest people really should be turned away from IVF and B&Bs just because they're gay, I
Tremors theme tune was composed by Mark Hodge, produced by Tom Simpson, and David Sharp. Thanks to Zoe, Sally, and everyone at King's Place, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com. I can't remember the name of the character now, but the brunette one that was is closest to community, closest to college age. Do you know her?
Anna.
Annie. Yeah, I'll do it again so that the audience at home don't think I don't know her name.
It's all a con.
Okay. So, do you guys know Community?
Yeah.
So, do you know the character of Annie?
Yeah.
Don't laugh or they'll know.
Tom, leave
this. Do that again. We'll do a pickup, but this time, do your job better. Pretend you don't know. Okay. So, do you know Community?
Yeah.
Do you know Annie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Great character. There's one, it's a very parodic show.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.